discovered in a shopping mall while stuffing my pimple-covered 18-year-old face full of, quote, frozen yogurt. I put frozen yogurt in quotes because, let's keep it real, it's ice cream. It's sugary, topping-covered, diabetes-in-a-cardboard-bucket ice cream. Watching obese people go directly from their Weight Watchers meetings to a frozen yogurt shop is kind of like watching all those poor people fall off the sides of the Titanic when it was sinking. If they only knew how that cold water would kill them. So I was walking around my local mall in Long Beach one summer afternoon in 2007. I had graduated from high school a year before that, and I was trying to figure out my next move. I had lost a shit ton of weight and got my signature emo haircut, so I had my sights set on being a Disney Channel star. I even had my own catchphrase. Hey, that's yo mama! Trust me, in the right sitcom with the right storyline, it could have totally worked. Anyways, I was trying to find some new clothes to go with my new look. I wanted to look like a young, fresh teenager, so I went into Urban Outfitters and started searching through all the ironic t-shirts. 10 Chuck Norris references later, I decided that this might not be my store. As I was leaving, a sad-looking woman in a turtleneck and high-rise pants walked up to me and grabbed my arm.
Wow, you look familiar.
A lot of older women tell me I have the eyes of their ex-husbands. Well, that's mainly just my mom.
Hey, and you're funny too.
I wasn't joking, but thanks.
You kind of look like that guy on TV.
The dude you're getting Adele guy? Yeah, I get that a lot. Not as much anymore since he killed himself.
No, I'm talking about you.
I'm a little confused. Is this a hidden camera show? Did you guys see me pick my ass and sniff it over there when I was looking through the ironic bumper stickers? Because I wasn't smelling for poop. It's just kind of a weird habit. Probably a childhood thing, something about loneliness and forcing unpleasantness upon my undeserving self.
No, I'm trying to tell you that you should be on TV. Are you an actor?
Yeah. I mean, I was in my high school musical.
Great, what part?
Fat guy with no song.
Wow. That's specific.
Yeah, I really made it my own.
Well, I'm from a big-time acting academy, where we have young actors come audition for us, and if we like them, we get them big Hollywood agents.
Wow, you're like a junk email come to life.
Seriously, it's legit. I have a card and everything.
She pulled out a business card for a company called Juan Casablancas. It was laminated and everything. It even had nice clip art next to her name. This wasn't some homemade shit. This was at least made at Kinko's. I instantly trusted her.
Come to the audition tomorrow. I'll tell everyone you're coming and bring that star quality.
As she walked away, I had an inkling of, oh shit, she's gonna rape and murder me. But I also had an inkling that,
hey, that's yo mama,
could finally become a reality. So I took my chances and walked into the nearest teeny bopper store and found the most Disney Channel outfit I could find. The next day, I pulled up to a shady building somewhere in Orange County. It was about 2 hours from Hollywood and also housed a divorced paralegal and a Planned Parenthood. So I should have known this probably wasn't going to be my ticket to fame. I got out of my car and checked my reflection in the window. Emo hair swoop greased down to my forehead? Check. Unflattering vest with decorative trim? Check. Jeans so skinny you can see the outline of my unimpressive, flaccid grower? Check. Endless amounts of sadness and desperation in my eyes? Double check. As I entered the elevator that smelled like abortion, I looked around at my fellow desperate wannabe stars, mostly terrified-looking kids with their parents. One girl told her dad she felt like throwing up, and her dad told her to swallow it. As I watched a 12-year-old girl vomit into her mouth and then swallow it, I started second-guessing whether or not I should be here. The elevator finally opened, and in front of me was a big lobby covered in movie posters and pictures of famous people. There was a flat-screen TV showing the Beyoncé World Tour, and there was dishes filled with candy everywhere. None of that butterscotch shit. We're talking Reese's and Mini Twix. I didn't even know they made Mini Twix. All my apprehensions were gone, and I was ready for this Hollywood life. We were all escorted to the sitting area, which looked like a mini movie theater. There was a stage, and there was a big screen playing clips from That's So Raven and Lizzie McGuire. I started mingling with the others, and I realized that something was fishy.
Me. So, how did you guys get invited to this?
Vomit girl.
A lady told my dad I should be on TV. She also said I was prettier than Hannah Montana.
Note, the girl had a lazy eye and some kind of skin disease that made her look slightly reptilian.
Really? Wow. That's nice.
Yeah, I don't want to be an actor, but my dad said I need to do it because he has a lot of legal bills.
And then her dad piped in.
Car accident. Killed a guy. His fault. You know how it goes.
Yeah, totally. Obviously, this wasn't a room full of talented, undiscovered stars. It was a room full of sad, desperate people who were borderline suicidal. I saw a mom eating her own hair. She actually ripped out a strand from her head, rolled it around in her fingers, formed it into a ball, and ate it. A loud feedback sound rang through the speakers and scared the shit out of everybody. It was a sad-looking turtleneck woman I had met in the mall. She was holding onto her microphone, doing her best Ryan Seacrest impression.
Ladies and gentlemen, who's ready to find the next superstar,
Everyone cheered, except Vomit Girl. She had vomit in her mouth.
Great, well, let's get started. Here's how it's gonna go. Everyone is gonna come up here on stage one by one and read a short commercial off that cue card. After me and the judges see all your auditions, we'll decide who's ready for part two of the competition.
So it started. One by one, we would go on stage and perform the worst written commercial ever, and then sit back in our seats and wait for our fate to be determined. I was up last. I got up on stage and I read that cue card like a champion.
I don't know about you, but I love food. It's my favorite thing. But who has time to make it? Not me. That's why I bought the Food Maker. It makes food. Buy one today.
I even took an invisible bite out of a sandwich and moaned a little. Damn, that guy's good, the Vomit Girl's dad said under his breath. After I got off stage, the turtleneck woman went up to the mic and started calling out people's names. She called about 10 out of the 30 who were there. My name was one of the lucky 10. The other 20 people left in tears, and I sat awaiting part two of the challenge.
Shane, let's start with you. Come on back to the office with me. I want you to meet someone.
I fixed my hair, checked my breath, picked my ass and smelled it, and I was on my way. As I walked into one of the offices down the hallway, I met a small man named Alan. He was flamboyant and loudly dressed. He even had a mug in his left hand that said, "I'm bringing Sassy back." I instantly trusted him.
So, you're the Sean I've been hearing so much about.
Actually, my name is Shane.
I know, I was testing you to see if you would correct me, and you did, you failed.
Oh, sorry.
Don't be sorry, be a welcome mat. Let people walk all over you. Feel the pain of Hollywood, and then once you've had enough, you can walk all over them. Make them bleed and feel sorry for everything they did to you.
Are we still talking about me?
Sorry, sometimes my passion gets the better of me. I've also had about 8 cups of coffee and 3 muscle relaxers, so I'm all jazzed up.
Let's get back to you. Well, I want to be an actor.
Get out of my office.
Huh?
Get the fuck out now! How dare you come into my place of work and tell me that you want something?
Is this the muscle relaxers talking, or...
Don't tell me you want to be an actor. You tell me you are an actor. Don't want be.
Oh. Wow. You really should get that printed on a mug.
I already did. I sell them on Etsy.
Signed. So, you think I could make it?
Baby, with me on your side, I can make you the next Mitchell Musso.
Note. Mitchell Musso was a thing in 2007. I know most of you have no idea who he is, but trust me, he was a thing.
All you have to do is sign up for this set of classes, and when you think you're ready, we'll set you up with a meeting with a big Hollywood agent. Great, sign me up. That's the spirit. It'll be $3,000, and please make it out to cash.
What?
Hey, it pays to be famous.
And trust me, kid, you got fame in your future. If you were a mug, you would have fame written all over you. I know what you're thinking. It's a scam. Why would anyone pay $3,000 to take classes from a dude who sells mugs on Etsy? Because desperation makes people do crazy things. I went home and told my mom about the entire experience, and even though deep down in her heart she probably knew it was a scam, she wanted to fulfill my dream so badly that it didn't matter. We were pretty poor at the time, so she had to max out every credit card she could find. I think we even got my grandma to chip in. All I could think about was getting rich and famous and finally getting my family out of this hellhole we've been living in. My parents divorced when I was about 9, and they both filed for bankruptcy. So since then, it's been a daily struggle just to make ends meet. That vomit girl and I weren't so different after all. We just wanted to be out of our current situation. I wanted to be on TV and be a star, and she wanted her dad not to go to prison for manslaughter. The next week, I went in for my first class. I looked around at my fellow students, and I noticed a lot of them were from that group of 20 that were told to leave the audition. I asked one of them why they were there, and they said, "Oh, they called me later and said that I was actually in the top 10, but they didn't want to tell me till later to toughen up my skin." That's the moment I knew all of this bullshit was a fraud. The posters on the wall, the Beyoncé tour playing on the flat screen, the good candy. It was all a cover-up for some scam where con artists sucker desperate parents into paying thousands of dollars for bullshit classes. And I fell for it. Hard. A tall, model-looking woman walked out in front of the class and introduced herself as the teacher of the day. Her name was Nev, and she looked like she stepped out of a magazine. I was sucked back into the scam and was eating up every word.
"Hello, class. I'm going to teach you how to walk like a model today. Who here knows how to walk?"
All the students laughed, although that would have been super awkward if anyone was in a wheelchair.
"Good. Stand up and let's see what you got."
So the rest of the students, who were all under the age of 12, and I started walking back and forth across the room while Nev judged us like horses. She was yelling things like,
"Straighten your back! Stop smiling! Suck in that ass!"
I'm not sure exactly how one can suck in that ass, but you better believe I tried my hardest. After we did our walk, she lined us up and started critiquing our looks. She got to me and let me have it. She told me that my teeth were too yellow, my arms were too white, and the thing that really stung?
"That hair! What is with that hair? You need to cut it all off or you will never get anywhere in Hollywood!"
From that point on, I knew this woman was no longer to be trusted. Even I, with all my self-hatred, knew that this emo hair was in style and very marketable to a younger audience. This chick was a fraud, and it took her making fun of my hair to show me that. After class, I walked back into Alan's office and had a one-on-one with him. A few teachers tried to stop me, but I was like a pregnant lady making my way through Disneyland looking for a turkey leg. People were going to either get the fuck out of my way or be killed. I opened his door and let myself in. "I need to talk to you."
"You seem angry. Here, have a mini Twix."
"No, there's no amount of miniature candies or clever mugs that could change my mood right now. You guys are a fraud."
"Who is this? Because the one I know would never say such accusatory things."
"My name is Shane, and I want my mom's money back."
"Okay, I see that you're upset. Use it. Let's do a monologue. Have you ever seen that Tom Hanks movie where he finds out he has AIDS? Oh, there's a scene in there I think you could nail right now. Let me print it out."
"No. No monologues. No Mitchell Musso comparisons. I want my money back now."
"Cynthia, can you shut the door, hon?"
A tiny hand shut the door, and Alan motioned for me to have a seat.
"Yes, we're a business. We need people who are willing to pay the big bucks to get a ticket to Hollywood. And yes, some of the other children are hopeless and their parents should probably have visited the business next door years ago, if you know what I'm saying. But there's some of you who are talented and who we really are going to help out. You're one of the lucky few. We are going to get you one of the best agents we can find, and I promise you, a year from now, you're going to be winning a Teen Choice Award and we will be in the audience cheering you on."
"So you're telling me that you know some of the kids out there are hopeless?"
"I'm telling you, some of the kids out there smell like abuse and it turns me on."
He let out a small laugh. I didn't. I got up.
"You are a horrible, horrible person, and I hope you get all the bad karma that you deserve." "Wow, looks like you're the one who's bringing Sassy back."
"I hope you enjoy your life."
"Wait. Okay, I'll give you your money back. I'll even set you up with one of my agent friends. Deal?"
I took the deal, but I walked out of that room and told all the other students' parents what a scam this company was. Unfortunately, none of them cared. The slight glimmer of hope that all of those movie posters on the wall were giving them was enough to blind them from reality. A year later, I decided to go to their website to see if Alan still worked there, and what I found was not shocking at all. The company had gone under because of all the legal fees they weren't able to keep up with due to all the lawsuits from the former students. I breathed a sigh of relief. Karma does always come back around, and a few years after that, I won a Teen Choice Award for Choice Web Star, and I thought all about the people who had helped me get there. And not one of those people was Alan or anyone from that shitty acting academy next to the abortion clinic. Denny's and Death. The smell of Denny's at 3 a.m. reminds me of two things. One, burning hot diarrhea rushing out of my swollen hole. And two, the death of my grandmother. The first one is pretty obvious. I mean, they have an entire menu dedicated to baconizing and cheesifying their food. That just sounds like anal leakage. The second is because that's where I was the night I waited for my grandmother to die. I know, it sounds morbid, but it's the truth. It was a night of me and my brother constantly checking our phones to see if we had a text from my mom saying, "She's gone," and then some kind of terribly conceived sad face emoticon. Most likely something like the number 8 with an asterisk and a parenthesis, or even something like a hashtag with a P and a parenthesis and an and sign. I've gotten that emoticon from her before. I have no idea what it stands for, but it can't be good. I was 21 years old, and I had just moved out of my mom's house and gotten an apartment with my older brother, so our phones were usually filled with texts from my mom every morning. Usually about some dream she had had in which we both died a violent death. And she was just checking to see if we were okay. You guessed it. I got my calm, rational personality from my mother. My grandmother was a pretty healthy woman considering she lived on a diet of fat-free cookies and old people candy. So when she was admitted to the hospital, it was a shock to us all. She complained of her legs hurting, so we figured, you know, maybe she had torn a muscle from too much running to the toilet. My bowel issues are genetic. But the doctor said she needed to stay overnight for additional testing. She took it as a mini vacation and wasn't worried at all, and neither were we. Old people go to the hospital all the time. Unfortunately, it was more serious than we thought. The next morning, I had a voicemail on my phone from my mom. She was calling from the hospital, and I could tell it was serious because it didn't start with her singing some kind of Weird Al parody song. "Shane, call me when you get this. Grandma's not doing well. I think this is it." I'll never forget that voicemail. It hit me in the gut like a baconized, cheesified quadruple burger. I was numb. I ran into my brother's bedroom without even knocking on the door to make sure he had time to cover his morning erection. He jumped out of bed when I told him the news, and we rushed out of the apartment like it was on fire. My brother and I had a very special bond with my grandma. Most of my happy memories as a child involved her. She had a shitty attitude and hated everything. She watched trashy TV shows and yelled at the screen. She was a night eater and left the bathroom door open while she did her butt business. She was my soulmate. One of my favorite memories was when me and my brother would dress her up as rapper 50 Cent and had her repeat his incredibly racist and demeaning lyrics on camera. I always thought I'd want to show that video at her funeral, but she had a black friend, so when that day finally came, I knew it would be all kinds of awkward. But back to that awful morning. My brother and I hopped in the car and sped down the freeway like we were in some shitty Nicolas Cage action movie. We almost killed about 8 people, but it would have been worth it. If I didn't get to say goodbye to my grandma before she passed, I don't think I'd ever be able to forgive myself. I had so many things I wanted to say to her. I had so many selfies I wanted to take with her. She loved a good selfie. Hashtag no filter, of course. We got to the hospital and ran up to the room faster than we had ever run before. It was like there was a drug dog chasing us and our asses were packed with coke. I was completely unprepared for what I saw when we finally got to the room. She wasn't watching trashy TV and yelling at the screen. She wasn't treating the nurses like waitresses at TGI Fridays. She wasn't doing her butt business with the bathroom door open. She was lying on a cold, stiff bed, with a tube down her throat and a machine pumping oxygen into her lungs. She was a shell of the woman I knew. I had no idea who this woman was. The woman I had seen the night before was fun, loud, slightly prejudiced, but she was gone. I broke down into tears and I had to leave the room. I did the only thing I knew how to do. I vlogged. I went into the bathroom and I took out my iPhone and I just started talking to it. I talked about how scared I was to lose her. How mad I was at God for doing this. How horrible hospital bathrooms smelled. I spilled my guts and it made me feel slightly better. About an hour later, I went back into the room and the rest of the family was standing by her bedside. We aren't the chattiest of families, so the awkward silence wasn't all that awkward. Nobody knew what to say. I mean, what can you say? The doctor walked in and gave us the lowdown. She has a lack of salt that caused her body to shut down. She only has a few days left. I'm so sorry. If you're hungry, there are terrible snacks in the cafeteria that are covered in arm hair from our cook. So we waited by her bedside for the next few days. We try to entertain ourselves by playing I Spy, but the game gets kind of depressing when all you have to spy are urine tubes, poop bags, and a half-dead person. So we mainly just played on our phones. After a few nights, my brother and I decided to eat our emotions, and Denny sounded like the perfect place to do it. At 3 a.m., there were plenty of hookers, hobos, and drunken teenagers to keep us company. We ordered pretty much everything on the menu, including something called a spice to meet ya. Meat spelled M-E-A-T. Yeah, classy. After eating that disaster, I thought I would for sure be dead before my grandma. Beep, beep. A text. My brother and I made eye contact. Who's going to look at their phone first? Who wants to get the sad news and have to tell the other one? Maybe we should just get another spice to meet ya and go into a food coma. Ring, ring. A text and now a phone call? Okay, nobody calls anyone anymore unless somebody is literally dead. This couldn't be good. I answered my phone and it was my mom.
Grandma's awake! She's sitting up in her bed eating meatloaf and complaining that all the nurses all look like 99-cent store cashiers. She's back!
Two miracles happened that night. The first being my grandma's resurrection, and the second being my ass didn't bleed from all that beige food I shoved down my face hole. We rushed back into the hospital, and there she was, the woman I hadn't seen in 3 days, sitting upright and asking someone to turn on that show about that midget family. I cried happy tears as I flipped through the channels to find TLC. That night we had so much fun. We laughed, cried, showed my grandma countless viral videos of people falling down and getting hurt. It was truly one of the best nights I'd ever had with her. And then I was hit with reality. "Can I talk to you for a minute?" the doctor said with a look on his face like he had accidentally aborted my first child. I walked out into the waiting room with him. My brother and mom were in the bathroom. And he told me something that took every ounce of happiness out of my body and replaced it with a feeling of jagged pieces of broken glass. "Your grandma hasn't taken a turn for the better, I'm afraid."
"But she's up, and she's miserable. She's back to her old self again."
"Shane, sometimes when a person is dying, there is a period of time when they become conscious so they can give their families closure. It's a phenomenon, and we really can't explain it." "Wait, so is she already dead? Is that a ghost? A demon? An alien?" I'm so fucking confused, and the cheesified milkshake I had is starting to make me hallucinate. "No, that's your grandmother. She just doesn't know she's dying. She doesn't feel pain. Her brain is blocking all of that. She's enjoying her last night with her family, and when she falls asleep, she'll pass." Great. Now I had to tell my mom and brother that Grandma actually wasn't well. She was just having a supernatural experience, like a character in some terrible Kirk Cameron Christian movie. "Thanks, Doctor. You really know how to bring down the mood. Good thing you aren't in the children's ward, you dream crusher." So when my mother and brother came back, I told them what was going on. They weren't surprised. My mom had seen somebody die before, and my brother had watched a lot of documentaries about death. So they both had a feeling like that's what was happening. So one by one, we went into the room and had a conversation with Grandma and tried to get as much closure as we could. I thanked her for everything she had done for me. She was a reason I started acting. She was a reason I had a sliver of confidence in myself. She was the reason I smiled as a kid. When I was scared of my mom and dad's fighting, I would run up to her room upstairs and she would hold me for hours. There wasn't a bruise she didn't kiss, or a cut she didn't spray with horribly painful medicine. She meant everything to me, and then some. My brother and mother had some time with her, and then around midnight she fell asleep. We all stood and watched her. The waiting game was happening again. A few hours later, her heart was still beating. She wasn't letting go. I asked the doctor how long he thought she had, and he said it was up to her. If she was holding on to something, it could take a while. I knew what I had to do. I asked my brother and mother for a moment alone with her. I sat by her side and I held her hand, and I whispered to her, "Grandma, are you there?" She replied in a soft, almost inaudible whisper, "Shaney, do you know that you're dying?" "Yes." "Are you scared?" "Yes." "Is it because you don't want to go to hell?" Silence, and then a tear fell from her eye. My grandma wasn't the most pleasant woman to be around throughout her life, and I'm sure she was feeling a lot of guilt about that. "Grandma, you might have been kind of a bitch to a lot of people in your life, but to me, you were my rock. You protected me. You made me feel special and never judged me. God is so proud of you, and you have nothing to be afraid of." She gave me a small smile. Her eyes were still closed. There wasn't much life left in her, but there was enough for her to hear me. "Is there anything else you're afraid of?" She squeezed my hand as hard as she could, which was still gentler than a toddler. "Are you scared to leave me and Jared?" "You need me." I burst into tears. She was right. I needed her so badly. I was just beginning to become successful on YouTube, and I was so nervous about what life was going to turn into. My brother was just getting his life together. I needed her pep talks. But we needed to let her go. "Grandma, I love you so much, but I want you to let go, okay? And don't worry about us. We'll be fine. You can watch over us every day and make sure that we're on the right track." Another tear fell from her beautiful, peacefully closed eye. "It's going to be so much better up there. You're going to fly and shit. That's insane. I've always wanted to fly. You can come hang out with me in my dreams and do all that cool angel stuff that we learned about on that terrible Touched by an Angel show that we used to watch together." She smiled. God, that show was fucking terrible. "Thank you, Shaney. I love you. I love you so much." I kissed her hand, and she ran her fingers through my hair. After a few peaceful minutes, I went to the waiting room and told my brother to go in and talk to her. They had a private conversation. I'm sure it was similar to ours and just as special. We felt at peace with the situation, so we went home to get some sleep. My mother wanted to stay the night and be by her side. The next morning, we got a phone call from my mom saying that she had passed that morning. She even opened her eyes and said, "I'll always be there for you guys," right before she left. I feel bad that I wasn't there for her last breath, but I feel like the moment we shared the night before was so special that nothing could top that. And to this day, I will never forget the feeling of her hand squeezing mine. And every time I go into Denny's at 3 a.m., which is frequently, I know she's sitting in the booth next to me, dreading the diarrhea that's bound to come. I love you, Grandma. Always. My birthday suit. I'm going to start this off by saying I am not a fan of swimwear. Any way you look at it, it's underwear that you pee into. The material always feels like rejected scraps of some shitty Halloween costume, and whoever thought Velcro instead of zippers was a good idea needs to be shot. Up until I was 18, I had never even tried on a swimsuit. My outfit of choice at the local pool was jean shorts and a shirt I could really get lost in. Sometimes when I lie in bed, I can still hear the suction sound of my fingers pulling my wet shirt from the deep cleavage between my boy tits. One time I even wore my grandmother's muumuu to the beach. I'm not gonna lie, getting out of the water with all that wet polyester clinging to my curves kinda made me feel like Bo Derek in 10. If my grandma and I sported that muumuu side by side in a trashy magazine, I think I would have gotten the coveted Wore It Best title, but I digress. On my 18th birthday, I stood naked in front of my zit cream covered mirror and stared at my body. Really stared. I was a man now, and I wanted to see what I was working with. Sure, I had great hair, thank you, Mom, and extremely hairy shoulders, fuck you, Dad. But what I couldn't stop staring at was my loose skin. After high school, I lost around 150 pounds, and I still had all the stretched out saggy skin. My body looked like that painting with all those melting clocks. My droopy chest and hangy stomach were like a cartoon frowny face. Of course, when I would lie down, I looked like a fucking supermodel. I would just tuck in all that skin under my back and my armpits and suddenly transform into a Greek god. But as I stood in that mirror and saw that frowny face staring back at me, I realized I had to do something about it. My first idea was to use duct tape. Now, for some reason, my family had duct tape at our disposal at all times in my house. I'm not sure why. Were we getting ready to kidnap a girl who was visiting shore during her family cruise? Were we trying to tape up all the wicker furniture I had broken over the years? I don't know. Whatever the reason, we had a shit ton of it. So I grabbed 3 rolls, locked my bedroom door, and started shaping. I was like an artist working on a sculpture, working all my clay into a form that could pass as a normal human body when clothed. Each long piece of tape was wrapped tighter than the last. I got to the end of the 3rd roll and looked in the mirror, and what I saw wasn't the Greek god that I was hoping for. I looked more like a can of pastry dough that had popped open in a few places. The tape was a failure, but luckily I did get rid of all that shoulder hair when I had to rip off 3 rolls of industrial-grade duct tape from my fucking skin. After that, I made a few more failed attempts at creating my dream body. Some involved saran wrap, chip clips, a child's wetsuit from Target, even super glue. The last one didn't end too well. But then an idea so genius, so inventive, so emotionally scarring popped into my head. My mother's one-piece swimsuit. I have so many memories of my mother's swimsuit. Even as a young kid, I remember thinking, is my mom a whore? The suit was tight, black, and had an open back. It even had a little keyhole in the front to show off that belly button, but still hide that C-section scar. It was tasteful, yet sensual. One time I even found a suggestive picture of her wearing it in a box labeled divorce stuff in the hallway closet. She hadn't worn it for years, so I figured the baton should be passed. It was time to give that suit a new story, a new master. It was time to give that suit its second life. So I waited till she was at work, and I snuck into her room and started hunting. I looked in every drawer and every dresser, and I couldn't find it. Although I did find some of her 80s spandex workout clothes, which were a solid plan B. I went to the hallway closet and looked in a box marked Goodwill, and there it was. The tight black suit with the worn-out crotch pad. Side note, what is that crotch pad for? Is it to protect your vagina from the impact of a big wave? Or maybe to have a strong barrier between the vagina and the sand? I can imagine how uncomfortable a sandy vagina is. Almost as uncomfortable as the sand would get in my loose underboob skin. See, women, I relate to you. I grabbed the suit and ran into my room. This time I left the door unlocked. I was kind of an exhibitionist. I slipped one leg in, then the other, and hoisted it up all the way to my hairless shoulders. I packed in all that skin, kind of like I was tucking in a king-size bedsheet into a twin-size mattress. I stood up straight and looked in the mirror, and the results were more beautiful than I had ever imagined. If you squinted with one eye and kind of went lazy with the other eye, I looked like a normal guy wearing a black tank top. I put on my jeans and threw on a t-shirt and looked in the mirror once again. This was the first time in years I'd actually just worn a shirt. You know, usually it was a big sweatshirt to hide my body, or a cargo jacket with a lot of pockets. But that day, my 18th birthday, it was just a shirt. I heard a honk outside, and I ran out there to show off my new body. It was my friends, and they were ready to take me for my big birthday celebration. Denny's and Knott's Berry Farm. Hey, I grew up in Long Beach, okay? What do you expect? Shane, nice shirt! I still remember my friend complimenting me as I got into the back seat. I casually said, oh, thanks. I don't know, got it from Target or whatever. The truth was, I had gotten it from Macy's months before, and had been saving it for when my body was flat enough to wear it. And it cost about $30, by the way. Yeah, it was an investment in my future. So we drove to the amusement park, and the whole time we talked about what rides we were going to go on. I hadn't been on any of them, because I was always too afraid I wasn't going to fit. I had been kicked off a roller coaster when I was fat, so the thought of getting on one again was horrifying. almost as horrifying as having to wear my mother's pre-divorce one-piece under my clothes. When we got out of the car, I felt the wind flowing through my shirt. I made an audible, ah, sound. It was probably incredibly creepy to my friends, but to me, feeling the air so close to my body was a sensation I'd only dreamed of. We walked to the front gates and got our tickets. We had printed them out at home because that was the cool thing to do. That and sneak your own candy into the park. I think I had about 3 packs of peanut butter cups tucked into my crotch pad. Thanks, Mom. Next! The security guard shouted as we made our way up to the front of the line. I noticed people were having to take off their jackets and hats because they were setting the metal detectors off. Thank God I'm not wearing a jacket like I used to, I thought to myself. Thank God all I have on is my... Oh, wait. Oh, God. I ran my fingers down my back and noticed that my mother's swimsuit had a metal clasp. What did that mean? Well, was I going to have to take off my shirt? How would I explain to a security guard that I wasn't packing a knife, but instead I was wearing my mother's swimsuit underneath my clothes? Not only were all my friends with me, but literally everyone from my old high school worked there. At that moment, I started planning my escape. Should I fake a heart attack? Crap, that only worked when I was fat. Okay, what if I pretend to have a seizure? That's a thing, right? Spontaneous seizures? As I was about to make my choice, I heard the dreaded, "Next!" and I had to face my fears head on. First, the security guard patted me down. I'm gonna be honest, I was excited. I'm sure to him he was just patting down a normal dude, but to me, I was a normal dude. He was probably not feeling any of my extra skin. He probably thought I had a normal body. Maybe even pecs. Granted, it was just my boob skin protruding outward, but hey, if he thought it was pecs, I wasn't going to fight him. Then came the metal detector. Thank God the suit was water resistant because, whew, the sweat was pouring. Beep! Are you hiding anything, man? His eyebrows furrowed at me like I was packing something dangerous. Only 3 packs of peanut butter cups. But you can't blame me. The prices on snacks in there are ridiculous. I laughed uncontrollably for a good 20 seconds. Turn around, kid. I turned around, facing my friends who were all laughing at me. One said, uh-oh, he's gonna frisk you. Happy 18th birthday. I know I should have been scared of getting a gloved finger up my ass, but I was more afraid of him seeing that I had on Kirstie Alley's Oprah Winfrey reveal outfit underneath my clothes. I'm just going to lift up your shirt a little. You okay with that? No, it's not okay. If you lift my shirt up, everyone is going to see my keyhole cutout, and there's no way I can pretend like it's just an undershirt I got from Target. Who would believe that Target sells undershirts with keyhole cutouts? But of course I said, oh, okay, sure. Yeah, just not too high. I have back knee. Nice save. His hands lifted my shirt up in the back, and he paused. Confused. What is this? He asked under his breath. It's a swimsuit? Aren't there water rides here? Another nice save. Yeah, but isn't this, like, for chicks? My heart started racing. My friends were trying to read our lips. What's going on? Hurry up, Shane! One of my friends screamed as I literally diarrheaed myself in panic. I'm gonna go get my boss just to make sure this is okay. Hold on.
Your boss? Why do you need to bring more people into this? Why can't this just be a quick and easy embarrassing moment? Why do we have to make it a whole fucking spectacle? This is getting ridiculous. I wish I would have just stuck with my duct tape.
Excuse me, sir, can you lift up your shirt?
Said the boss, who was filing her nails while she was investigating the situation. Obviously it's not that serious, so why are we doing it?
Sure, ma'am.
I lifted up the back of my shirt slightly.
More, please.
So I did.
More.
I pulled it up again.
Sir, I'm going to need to see your whole back.
Why? Do you really think I have a knife taped to my spine? Because if I did, I would have already killed myself with it.
Sure. I slowly lifted, trying to keep the keyhole cutout in front covered up. But I was moving too slowly, and the boss had a lot of nothing to get back to, so she grabbed my shirt and ripped it up. Gasp, shock, confused noises. All of these things coming out of my friends' mouths. Then came the boss's laughter.
Oh my God, you're wearing a women's swimsuit? You're a kinky motherfucker, aren't you?
The boss thought this was the funniest thing she had ever seen. I don't know what would be more embarrassing, telling the truth or just going along with this kinky story.
He's free to go. Have fun in there, beautiful.
Well, I'm glad she had a blast, because now it was time for me to explain to my friends what had just happened. I stood at the side while they got checked for metal materials, and of course, all of them were clean. As they walked up to me, my heart started racing. I thought I was going to pass out. Blood started rushing to my head, and I was sweating. What was I going to say when they asked me why I was wearing a woman's swimsuit?
Who's ready to go on the boomerang?
One of my friends screamed. A collective yell of excitement came from the rest of the group as they headed toward their first ride. They didn't ask. They didn't care. They were my friends, and it didn't matter to them. A tear fell from my eye as I screamed, "Let's do it!" We went to the park and had an awesome day. Thanks, Mom, for my birthday suit. Internet famous. It was 9 o'clock on a Saturday night, and I was dining at an incredibly fancy restaurant, eating incredibly fancy food with my incredibly sophisticated friends. Okay, I'm lying. We were eating shitty cheap Mexican food with what was probably dog meat in the taco filling and talking about all the times we had carded. For those of you who don't know, carded is a term used to describe the classy act of simultaneously coming while farting. It was a very in-depth conversation that went on for about 2 hours and two baskets of chips too long. As I was mid-story about one incident where my dog licked my butthole while I was masturbating and I didn't push him away, come on, we've all been there. A table nearby started yelling my name. I turned to look, and what I saw was a familiar sight. It was a few teenagers with their incredibly confused parents. Teenagers. Shane! Parents. Who's that? Teenagers. The guy from the internet! That conversation between child and parent doesn't go too well when the child isn't actually a teen. I've had way too many 8-year-olds scream, "That's the man from the internet!" to their parents in the middle of a crowded Target. Luckily, this time it was sweet and innocent and appropriate, so I walked over to the table and took pictures with them. Little did I know, this wouldn't be the last time a table full of people would notice me that night. The next group wouldn't be so nice, but I'll get to that later. The whole idea of being recognized in public is something I never imagined would happen to me, much less I'd be comfortable with. As a kid, all I wanted was to be invisible. Not because I wanted to sneak into my guy friend's room to compare their dick sizes to mine, but because I didn't want anyone to notice me. I was never the class clown, and I did everything I could to make myself blend into the background. Whenever I went to a store, I would try to color coordinate my outfit to the store's color scheme so I would just blend into the walls. Although that didn't always work out so well, because customers would assume I was an employee and constantly ask me for help, which was the opposite of invisible and the opposite of fun. I can't tell you how many old women I had to help reach the elderly pads on the back of the shelf at Target. I threw all my red shirts away after that. The first time I was recognized for my YouTube videos was when I was 18 years old. I was going to the doctor's for a physical. This was the first time I had let a doctor see my goodies, and I was extremely nervous about it. I spent an hour that morning manscaping in the bathroom. I wasn't very good at it. My razor was so covered in blood you would have thought it had telekinetic powers. At the doctor's office, I sat in the waiting room and stared at my blank phone pretending to read a text. This was before there were apps, so it was a lot harder to pretend to be busy. I can't imagine standing in an elevator now next to a stranger and not have apps to help me avoid eye contact. Ugh, sounds horrible. The doctor's assistant walked out to greet me, and she had an expression on her face that I had never seen before. It was a look of someone who had just seen a dead person, or a leprechaun. She appeared to be in shock and didn't move for a good 5 seconds. Man, I wish I had an app. Those 5 seconds felt like an eternity.
Oh my God, you're Shane Dawson.
Hi, do I know you? At the time, my videos weren't getting that many views. I probably only had around 5,000 subscribers, and the only people who left comments were family members and people telling me to go get AIDS and die. So basically, it was just family and friends.
Yeah, I watch your videos.
You do?
Yep, every week. My screen name is Rachel P. Flower.
Oh, I think I've seen you in the comments. Are you the one who told me to sit on a sword and kill myself?
No.
Oh, I hope I get to meet that person one day. I'm sure he's lovely.
So what are you doing here?
Getting a physical. Then reality hit me. As I told her I was getting a physical, her face went from, "I just saw a leprechaun," to, "I'm a cartoon dog and I just saw a cartoon steak." Her eyes were wide and her mouth was practically foaming. Was this fan going to get to see my everything? This was too much. This was much more than taking a selfie. This was showing her my everything-y. I tried to keep cool, hoping that maybe it was her job to just send me back to the examination room and leave me alone with a doctor to do our uncomfortable business. "Well, come on back." I followed her to the doctor's office, and she asked me to sit on the bench. She took a gown out of the closet and handed it to me. "Here, change into this, and leave the back undone so the doctor can have easy access to your anus." She left the room, and I froze. I don't even think I had an anus at this point. I was so full of nerves that it had completely closed up. I tried to compose myself and put on my horribly unflattering gown. As I finished changing, the assistant walked back in. "Okay, the doctor will be in here soon. I'm just going to check your vitals really quick." She sat on a stool and swiveled over to me. She got so close that her knee was up against my poorly shaven balls. The only thing between her knee and my sad sack was a gown thinner than Bible paper, and I was praying to Jesus Christ that it wouldn't rip. "So, working on any new videos?" "Nope, just trying not to die of humiliation at the moment." "Oh, is this your first physical?" "Yeah, the closest I've ever had to a physical was my mom cleaning up my dick cheese when I was 12. "She did that until you were 12? "So, who's the doctor? Is he nice?" "It's a she, and she's awesome. I showed her some of your videos last week during our lunch break. She loved them." "Oh my God, this isn't happening. God doesn't exist."
"Oh, really? Wow, that's cool."
"Yeah, I told the whole office you were here. They're all so excited. We love when you put on that wig and act all ghetto." "I can't stop sweating. I want to die."
"Oh, awesome.
All right, I'll go get the doctor. Don't go anywhere."
"I won't."
"I'm going to jump out of the motherfucking window."
The door opened and in walked the doctor. "She seems normal enough," said my brain in disturbing denial. "I'm sure she doesn't remember me at all. She must be 50 years old. Maybe she has a bad memory. Maybe she got amnesia on the way to work today."
"Hey, where's your wig? I didn't recognize you."
She laughed hysterically. My anus clenched.
"I'm kidding. How are you?"
"I'm okay. Just trying to get this over with."
"Me too. You know how many balls I've touched today? More than all the Jonas Brothers put together. Hey-o!"
She went for a high five. My anus clenched.
"Sorry, just trying to keep up with you, you crazy guy. So let's get this started, shall we?"
She walked up to me and asked me to lie down. As I lay down, I looked up at the ceiling and envisioned my head getting cut off by that ceiling fan. Anything to get my mind off the current situation. She reached her hand up my gown and grabbed my balls. She was gentle and polite about it. I closed my eyes and just let it happen. Things were going pretty smoothly until...
"Hey, douche-nay-nay."
That was the moment I knew my life would never be the same. I was no longer just a stranger getting my balls fondled by a doctor. I was a YouTube guy getting his balls fondled by a doctor who wanted him to tell offensive jokes in a ghetto woman's voice. From then on, it only got crazier. Over the next 7 years, I would be stopped for pictures while I was peeing in a urinal, while I was vomiting outside a theme park roller coaster, even while I was on the side of the road after a car accident. But I would also learn how to handle it surprisingly well. Nowadays, I never take it for granted, and I know if it wasn't for people watching my videos, I wouldn't be able to do any of the amazing things that I've been able to do in the last few years. The most insane situation was at the first VidCon in 2010. For those of you who don't know, VidCon is a convention for YouTubers to come together and meet their audiences. It now has over 30,000 guests every year, but back in 2010, the attendance was only like a tenth of that. I was invited as a special guest, and I couldn't wait to meet the people who had been supporting me. I put on my ugliest vest, which I thought was fashion forward, and headed to the convention center. During the drive over, I got a phone call from the people working at VidCon, who sounded like they were in crisis mode.
"Shane, where are you?"
"On my way. What's going on?"
"Did you tweet that you were on your way?"
"Yes, is that okay?"
"No, there's a riot at the front door."
"A riot? Come on, it can't be that bad."
I heard a scream in the background, and I'm pretty sure I heard, "I can't feel my legs!" But I could have been mistaken.
Oh my god! Yeah, I know! When you get here, we have 3 security guards. Text me when you're out front. We'll assign them to you.
3 security guards? I mean, come on, I'm a YouTuber, not Obama. I make dumb videos on the internet and teach kids about sex. Why was I getting treated like a famous person? It made no sense to me, and I was super uncomfortable. I guess I never felt worth that kind of attention. I still don't. But enough of my self-hatred. Let's get back to the story. So I pulled up to the entrance and saw a crowd of over 1,000 kids freaking out and knocking each other over. Some of them were holding signs with my name on them, and some of them were wearing shirts with my face on them. Seeing my face plastered on a bunch of underage girls' chests was definitely not something I thought would ever happen. Just like I never expected my actual face would ever be on an of-age girl's chest in my life. I had a lot of emotions flowing through me, and I had an instant panic attack. As I stepped out of the car, I was surrounded by teenagers. 3 bodyguards walked up to me and took my arms. They escorted me through the crowd, and to say I look like a douchebag would be an understatement. I was a YouTuber surrounded by bodyguards. Doesn't get any douchier than that. Luckily, I was led to an area in the convention center where I got to do a meet and greet with the fans, and I met every single one. I stood there for 8 hours, hugging, taking selfies, signing mothers' boobs, and just having conversations with them about what was going on in their lives. It was amazing. It was at that moment I didn't want to be invisible anymore. I felt like I was really making a difference in these kids' lives, and because of my videos, some of them were able to have a happy escape. It was a magical day, and I will never forget it. Which leads me back to the shitty Mexican restaurant on a Saturday night not so long ago. As I was leaving, my body decided I need to release all that questionable meat, and I need to release it now. I ran to the bathroom, but it was locked, so I stood and waited while gripping my loud stomach. A family at a nearby table made eye contact, and each had that familiar, just-saw-leprechaun face. I prayed that they wouldn't come up to me, because at any moment my stomach was going to make butt gravy and I did not want them to smell what I was cooking. But it was too late. The leprechaun had been spotted. The family ran up to me and surrounded me by the bathroom. It was a mom holding a baby, 2 12-year-olds, and a grandma. They were all speaking at once and asking for a shit ton of selfies. I took pictures with the baby, and the mama, and the baby mama, and just the baby. At one point, I'm pretty sure I was sitting on the grandma's lap while she was in her wheelchair. It got weird. Then the bathroom door opened, so I politely said goodbye, but to them, goodbye meant, hey, let's go into the bathroom together and watch me poop. They all crowded into a small bathroom with me and started asking me for advice on how to get popular on Instagram and if I was friends with PewDiePie or not. I was trying to answer all their questions, but I had some of my own PewDiePie to make. So I was trying my hardest to hint that I was ready for them to leave. Then a waitress walked in. I was relieved because I thought for sure she was going to tell them to get out and possibly give me some kind of, I don't know, free taco gift card. Instead, she screamed, "Hey, do shenene!" I now was in a single-person bathroom with an entire family and half the crew of the restaurant. Yet I was still grateful and enjoyed how excited they were, until one 12-year-old hit me with a truth bomb.
"I thought you would be hotter in person. You're kinda ugly. LOL.
I don't know what was more offensive, the fact that she called me ugly, or the fact that she used LOL in everyday language. Either way, I wanted to be invisible. It was the first time since I was young that I had that feeling of just wanting to dissolve into the background. It's like she reached into my bean-filled body and ripped out my soul with her hand and then crushed it. I went home after that and laid on the bed for a good few hours and cried. I cried hard. I hadn't cried like that since Taco Bell came up with that Dorito taco thing. Except there was no happiness in my tears, just heartache. I considered taking a break from YouTube. The thought of going out in public and possibly seeing a fan made my heart shrivel up. What if they thought I was ugly too? What if every fan that has ever met me went back home and told their friends, "OMG, I have no idea Shane Dawson was deformed, LOL." I called my girlfriend Lisa, and she calmed me down and talked me off the ledge. "Shane, I know it hurts, but just remember, that's one person. There's a million people who love you, and if they saw you in public, they would be so happy that they wouldn't even notice how ugly you are.
Gee, thanks.
I'm kidding. You aren't ugly. You're the sweetest, most beautiful guy in the world, and there's so many people out there who agree with me. That girl was young and probably so nervous that she just blurted out something stupid. Please don't let it affect you. I know. It's just hard. Remember all those kids you met at VidCon?
Yeah.
Did any of them call you ugly?
No, I guess not.
Because they all love you so much. You're like a friend to them, or a creepy but loving older brother. And if you stopped making videos, it would break their heart. They would feel worse than you're feeling right now. Remember that.
And I did. The next day I woke up, showered, tried to make myself look less ugly, and filmed a video. I never want to go back to being invisible, even if it means having to deal with the occasional person saying something rude to me. It's worth it. But you know what's not worth it? Eating in a Mexican restaurant that has a C rating in the window. Trust me. Not fucking worth it.
How to survive a horror movie. When I was a kid, I would run around my house with a knife and pretend to murder my family. I know this sounds like something you might hear in a recording of a serial killer's therapy session, but I promise it's not that bad. I've had an obsession with horror films since I was around 5 years old. One day I walked into the living room while my older brother was watching a movie called Child's Play. It was about a kid whose doll tried to kill him, which I found perfectly plausible because of all the terrible things I had forced my dolls to do. I wouldn't be surprised if they had eventually turned on me. Ask Furby. Actually, don't bother. I took out his batteries years ago so he would keep his fucking mouth shut. Anyways, my obsession with horror only grew when I saw the movie Scream a few years later. From the first scene when Drew Barrymore gets hacked into pieces and hung on a tree in front of her parents, I was addicted. There's something so satisfying about watching a fictional character get ripped to pieces and splattered all over the walls. I'm sure that says something about me as a person or my mental state, but whatever. I like what I like, and what I like is the sound of a knife scraping bone beneath the skin. Sue me! Every time my friends would come over, I would force them to play the Scream game. Basically, it was just me chasing them with a knife and them having to defend themselves with whatever household items they could find. The only rules were we couldn't actually hurt each other, and whoever was the killer could not take off the mask. Because if you took off the mask, I mean, then it was just a kid running around trying to stab his friends. And even we knew that was too creepy. Around age 12, I made my first short film, and it was more disturbing than any scary movie you've ever seen. It was basically me naked in a bathtub full of ketchup choking to death on my own ketchup blood. I'm not sure what the plot was, but it definitely had a twist ending. And by twist ending, I mean it wasn't actually filmed by a creepy uncle in a dark basement. I think the reason I became so obsessed with watching people die in movies is because it was a way for me to feel in control. I had very little control over my life as a kid, and there was so much chaos and turmoil around me. My parents were always fighting and always had financial struggles. Watching horror films was a way for me to escape that and watch people who had shittier lives than me. And to have a shittier life than me meant you literally had to be getting butchered by a 7-foot-tall monster with knives for fingers. Another attempt at control was to hold in my poop. I would hold it in for days. So much so that when I burped, people would ask, "Who farted?" Either way, my dream was to one day star in my own horror film, in which I could run around and get chased by an underpaid actor wearing a mask and holding a rubber knife. That day finally came on my 23rd birthday. One of my good friends, Michael Gallagher, called me up and said he was directing a horror film called Smiley, and he wanted me to be in it. Before he could even describe the plot, I was already 1,000% in. I could already picture myself covered in blood, screaming for my life. I could also picture how many memes of me getting killed were going to be made by my haters. I was pumped. He sent me the script, and it was a movie about a girl who gets stalked online by a killer who wears a mask with a smiley face carved into it. Not only did I have an epic death scene, but I also got to play the killer. Twist ending! This time without the homemade ketchup child pornography. Score. I showed up to the first rehearsal and met a couple of the other actors. It was the first time I had really acted in something other than a YouTube sketch, so I was pretty nervous. I had stalked all of them on IMDb the night before and was immediately intimidated by what I found.